Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 7, 2019. Two people were killed during a deadly attack on Juba Bor Road.
Now, as we speak, a vehicle has been attacked along Bor Juba Road around the area of Njemeza. Two people have been killed, and we are yet to get the whereabouts of the rest of the people.
And some Sudanese have filed a petition over the separation of South Sudan from Sudan.
Both countries became weak. South Sudan witnessed another internal war which killed more people, to the extent that people who died within few years of the internal war is more than those who died during Sudan's first civil war.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two people were killed and three others injured when an unidentified gunman opened fire on a commuter taxi traveling from Bor to Juba today. Jonglei State Governor Makher Thiong Mal confirmed the incident and says several passengers are still missing after the attack. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Mankaman in Eastern Lake State.
Governor Makher Thiong Mal says a minibus with 17 passengers fell into an ambush at Njemeza, about 20 kilometers from Bor town. Speaking in his native Dinka, Governor Mal told a gathering at a conference about the attack.
Now, as we speak, a vehicle has been attacked along Bor Juba Road around the area of Njemeza. Two people have been killed, and we are yet to get the whereabouts of the rest of the people.
Mal condemns the incident and called for a speedy disarmament of armed civilians in South Sudan.
Such activities have wrought ambushes and killing innocent lives, and the reasons why the government want to make sure all the civilians are disarmed. I understand that some communities in Eastern Lakes have already been disarmed. We need the disarmament to be carried out speedily in the greater Jonglei area so that we can once again be peaceful.
Deng Kur is the secretary of Drivers Union in Bor town. Kur confirmed 17 passengers were attacked on their way along Juba Bor Road.
All I know now is that two people have been killed, but among those who have run into the bush, I don't know how many are injured, but some are with injuries. We have lost contact with them, and now we are not sure about their whereabouts.
Kur says the Bor Drivers Union has sent vehicles to rescue some of the passengers who survived the attack.
We have contacted the security official, but we could not find a quick response. It is only the Drivers Union that has just sent some vehicles now to go and look for the missing passengers. Some of them might have returned to the road.
This is not the first time gunmen have attacked commuter taxi and killed travelers along the Juba Bor Road. In November last year, three children were abducted and at least five people were injured when an unidentified gunman opened fire on a vehicle traveling from Bor to Juba. Two people were killed and three others injured after an unidentified gunman opened fire on a commuter taxi traveling from Bor to Juba earlier in November last year. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Minkaman, Eastern Lakes State.
A high court in Juba has freed three inmates, including a mother of five, who have been on death row since 2011. The court made the decision after the complainant's family agreed to forgive the convicts. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Former SPLA soldier John Kashia, former fire brigade officer John Pieng, and Stella Jua were accused of killing Joseph Amale Sebdeo in 2011. Lado Tombe is a representative of the complainant's family.
The family, and especially the children, because they need their single parent. So what happened today, they decided to forgive all of them. Their mother, who was suspected as one of the criminals, plus the other two gentlemen.
Tombe says it is time to forgive and move on with life.
I know we have some family members that are not around in Juba, But if they hear the outcome of today, still some may not be quite happy. But still, this is the decision. We need to move forward. You know, we need to move forward because already the husband is dead. The wife is there. So we need the mother to be with the children, to take care of the children and to bond them together.
Estella Joa was accused of murdering her husband in 2011, but she denied any involvement in the murder. Speaking in Arabic, Joa says she is grateful to her children for pardoning her.
Criminals came at night and killed my husband, and I was accused to have brought the killers, and we were all put in prison. I want to thank my children who have come up with the decision that I should be forgiven and I should go and raise them up. I also want to thank the family of my late husband who also came and we all greeted each other.
John Piang, one of the freed convicts, says the decision of the complainants to forgive him is a rare one.
By then I was charged with the case of murder and I was sentenced to death on date 10 August 2012. And then I read my appeal and the appeal was taking about 5 years. The case was terminated and again we have been sentenced again. When the case was terminated, we have been referred back for retrial. After we retrial, the case was sentenced again to death sentence. And then we write another appeal. So now the appeal was terminated and we referred back for retrial again. And today we just come to an end for the solution of pardon from the complainant.
A group calling itself Justice and Human Rights Observatory provides legal aid to inmates on death row at Juba Central Prison. Godfrey Victor Bula works with Justice and Human Rights Observatory. He says death sentence is not the best punishment and it should be abolished in South Sudan.
In South Sudan, people, a death of a single man can lead to the death of even 100 people. So that's why it is good for the parties to renegotiate the justice themselves by a way that they come to a terms that they will agree and that terms serve better than death sentence.
Bola says since January this year, his group has secured the release of 8 inmates on a death row in Juba.
We have realized since independence, death execution has been going on. It is increasing. It means that the imposition of death penalty and execution does not serve the purpose of deterring people from committing this kind of crime.
In December last year, Amnesty International accused South Sudan of executing 7 people by hanging, including 1 child, the highest number since the country gained its independence in 2011. South Sudan's transitional constitution allows death penalty for people found guilty of murder. Executions are carried out by hanging after the president of South Sudan signs an approval of the death sentence. Bula says rather than issuing death penalty, South Sudan should use an alternative punishment for capital offenses. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio. Juba.
Still on court matters, around 400 Sudanese and 10 South Sudanese advocates have petitioned the Sudanese Constitutional Court over what they call the illegality of splitting Sudan into 2 countries. A lawyer who leads the group says the procedure used for separating South Sudan from Sudan was against international law and contradicts the provisions for the right to self-determination. For VOA News, Michael Atit has details on the story from Khartoum.
Naji Mustafa, the lead advocate in the petition, says under the provisions of the international law, certain conditions should be met before granting the right of self-determination to any region. He says the leaders of Sudan's National Congress Party and the South Sudan's ruling party, SPLM, failed to meet 4 conditions for approving the secession of the region.
The region which needs to be separated should be united in terms of language, religion and culture. The other point is that there should be a clear border for the region. We don't give the right of self-determination to the people or a certain ethnicity without a known or a clear demarcated border. What happened in South Sudan is that the independence was granted to a group of people whose border is not clear. That is why border issues are still continuing between South Sudan and the neighboring countries, including Sudan.
Mustafa says, under the international law, independence can only be granted if discriminatory or racist actions are being practiced against the group seeking separation. He says this was not the case in Sudan before South Sudan declared its independence.
Both countries became weak. South Sudan witnessed another internal war which killed more people to the extent that people who died within few years of the internal war is more than those who died during Sudan's first civil war. Sudan experienced a real economic problem which led to an economic collapse. Now the political future of Sudan is faced by these challenges.
Mustafa says Khartoum should bring back South Sudan to the mother country, the Sudan.
We would like to see South Sudan reuniting with the mother Sudan once again. We need to see peace flourishing between the north and south. And what we would like to see as a fruit of the Sudanese revolution is to reunite Sudan as one country like before. And it has not been won. That means the current revolution has not achieved its vision of justice.
A member of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition, Babikir Faisal, agrees that the upcoming transitional government of the national unity is going to work towards uniting the Sudan.
We are brothers. We have the largest borders in two countries in Africa. Relations are very deep in our societies in Sudan and in South Sudan, and we will work deliberately to achieve this unity in the future, whether it will be started by the economy and things like that, and eventually I'm sure that the two countries will reunite.
Mustafa says if the Constitutional Court accepts to hear the case, the lawyers expect officials from both the National Congress Party of Sudan and the South Sudan's ruling party, SPLM, to be witnesses in court. The 400 Sudanese and South Sudanese advocates involved in the petition expect Sudan's constitutional court to act on the case soon. The advocates say they are hopeful the court will issue a final verdict on their case. For VOA News, Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Stigma and lack of funds for sanitary pads have made the topic of menstruation a taboo in many parts of the world. However, a group of men in South Sudan want to help change that. Men for Women is calling for an inclusion of the cost of hygiene products in school fees and a tax exemption on sanitary pads to allow girls attend classes. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Jata Gordon is the program manager for CARE Foundation, which initiated Men for Women initiative. He says there are many cultural beliefs around menstruation that have prevented girls from learning about their periods. He says ending the stigma around menstruation should start with men.
We are doing this because we find that out of the many reasons that girls drop out of school is that there is a high rate of period stigma. You find a girl can have stains on her clothes and boys laugh at her, and the next day she doesn't come to school, she misses school, and you find that that is the end of her life when it comes to education.
Okay Foundation says it initiated the program to create conversations between parents and daughters, as well as men and women, to end the stigma related to women's menstrual periods. Gordon says more than 70% of South Sudanese are illiterate, and to make matters worse, young girls drop out of school due to lack of money for buying sanitary pads. He says the government should offer a solution by relieving taxes on sanitary towels to encourage girls to stay in schools.
We are advocating for tax exemptions on sanitary products generally, say that a girl can be able to afford, or a parent can be able to afford. For example, if you use to buy, maybe spend £300 to buy 3 packets of sanitary pads, at least use that same £300 to buy maybe 5 packets of sanitary pads, and that will really help reduce the budget of sanitary pads, and it will also help NGOs to buy more of the sanitary pads to be able to distribute.
Olympio Atipo, Commissioner for Revenue Authority, says NGOs or international organizations get tax exemptions on products imported from abroad. He says items that are important to South Sudan's social development ought to be sold below the market price and made affordable to buyers. Atipo, however, warns that if sanitary pads are granted tax exemption and sold at the open market price, the seller would gain a profit at the expense of the buyer, creating an intended consequence.
Before we talk about exempting the sanitary pad, we really need to understand who are the people bringing the sanitary pad. If it's international organization and NGO, we are ready to exempt. But if it is a businessman who is in to make profit, exempting will not change anything because the same open market price is going to be charged. So the people that we want the exemption to benefit will not benefit from it.
Mary Tenge, senior teacher at Rainbow Primary and Secondary School, says the idea of increasing school fees to provide sanitary pads for girls is a good idea, but it may be too much for parents.
It is really a good idea, but we should first discuss with the PTAs, and the parents will also be called for meeting. Because when you include it without the parent being knowing it, they will also complain.
Tawadis Amin, a mother of a primary school pupil in South Sudan, says parents are struggling to pay school fees and any additional charges would not be fair. Speaking in Arabic, Amin says parents who don't have girls may not benefit, and some parents may decide to stop sending their children to school due to extra costs.
If the organization is able to provide sanitary pads, then it is better because adding the tuition fee will affect, since the father may say, I am not sending a girl to school. As for boys, adding the fees may mean nothing because they do not need pads. That's why I'm saying, as a mother, there is no need for the increment.
Gordon says the government should subsidize sanitary products so that families in South Sudan who live under $1 per day can afford sanitary needs, including sanitary pads. For VOA News, I am Muni Sirino in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese athletes are beating their chest, preparing for All African Games in Morocco. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what type of work do you enjoy?
I enjoy computing. Yeah, that's all. Because it gives me happiness every time that I do it.
Law is good. Law is good. I love the legal profession because it involves me and you. It's not like me alone.
I enjoy maybe working like in an office. Maybe my clients come to me like of that kind, not moving so much, and the kind of work I'm doing.
I don't work, but I play football. So that's my work. Only football and schooling. Yeah, because it's one of my career and I like it the most.
I am a nurse, so I like caring for older people because at that stage, they can't do anything. How they eat, taking care of themselves, it's a problem to them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan is attempting to rebuild its vast national parks and game reserves after 5 years of civil war. Reporter Sam Mednick recently visited a game reserve near the Congolese border where he tells Carol Van Dam there is a wide variety of animals that armed game wardens are trying to protect.
I mean, it is a very challenging life for them. I mean, they sleep by the reserve. They don't have, I mean, there's nothing really there. There's no paved roads. They sleep in these tents. You know, they're having people, you know, cooking their own food and everything like that. And they're right on the edge of the reserve. And then they go and do these patrols. They kind of break up into teams, but every so often, a couple times a month, the rangers with some community volunteers go into the reserve for a couple days and they sleep there. And they're camping and they're walking, just, you know, looking for traces of animals, learning how to use the GPS, checking the camera traps, but they don't have cars. They don't have you know, their uniforms are ripped, their boots are old. I mean, they were showing me their equipment and what they were wearing and, you know, saying that they need more things. And there's only really one post at the edge of that reserve. And they're saying if there were more posts around the reserve, they'd be able to get to places faster if they heard poachers or gunshots.
Right. And that's about the only way they can do it, right? When they hear gunshots or when they hear something like a poacher approaching, then they take off.
Right. So they told me an anecdote where they showed up one time and there were 8 bicycles, but people had fled. By the time they got there, all that was left were the bikes. So they don't, yeah, there's not really, there's no cars, and then there's not really a path even in the park to get there very quickly. So they just sort of feel like they're always on the back leg a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And what about chasing these guys and then coming across wherever they were? Do they ever find the dead animals?
They didn't mention it when I was there very recently, but they definitely have. I mean, over time. But that wasn't something that specifically stood out. It's more like they hear these gunshots and then by the time they show up, it's too late. But people in town told me that on several occasions they were offered to buy chimpanzees, you know, in the town that had been taken and that were being sold. So, I mean, this is going on.
And has it gotten worse since during the 5.5 years of fighting, and has it remained that way, even though they've signed this peace deal last September?
There was a period, from what I understand and when I was there, that it did get worse. I think 2015, 2016, the height of the fighting, 2017, you know, also when there were more firearms, that it was getting worse, and they felt like the poaching was escalating. They said that they feel like lately it's gone down a little bit, and that's a good thing, but that it's still there and it's still a threat.
That is reporter Sam Mednick speaking with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam about efforts to protect South Sudan's wildlife. The 12th annual All African Games are coming up in Morocco's capital, Rabat, later this month. As Mungume Devs Rokarenj reports from Kampala, over 7,000 athletes from 54 countries will compete this year. Among them are South Sudanese runners who plan to raise the flag of their country very high.
South Sudan's athletes will have to run faster in order to beat some of Africa's best athletes. The South Sudan team has been busy training this week for the games at the Mandela National Stadium in Nambole in Kampala, ahead of the Continental Showdown. The athletes say they have good players, including Olympic athlete Santino Kenyi, who competed at the international competition in Rio de Janeiro at the 2016 Summer Games. Kenyi says the outcome of the race will change his life.
My family, they ran they are cattle keepers, and I told myself that I do not want to be like them. I want to educate myself. I want to show example to others. I hope also I can inspire others and peace come to my country.
The 26-year-old was eliminated in the premier round of 1500 meters at the Olympics. But the challenge of competing on large stage for South Sudan was a good experience. He hopes to pass on the lessons he learned to some of his training teammates, including middle-distance runner Abraham Ajok Matet.
This is the first time that I'm going to compete with some of the best guys that I've been hearing about. And I will be very happy because it is my first time to go there also. And this time I will be able to study different paces.
This year's All African Games will be a qualifier in 15 disciplines for the upcoming Olympics in Tokyo, Japan next year, according to the Olympics Channel. Both Kenyi and Matete hope South Sudan's participation at the Games will bring unity and inspire millions of people whose hopes have been overshadowed by years of conflict and political instability. Matete says he wants to use the Games as a vehicle for change in his home country.
By that time when we come back, if I manage to win a medal, many journalists will come to me and it will give me a chance to pass my message of peace. What I feel in my heart about it, South Sudan being a peaceful country, it will be my opportunity to pass my message to them that it is good to be one.
Speaking in Arabic, South Sudanese coach Joseph Anthony says his team of runners have all it takes to win medals despite a shortage of resources for the athletes.
As a new country, we are still lacking out of things. For example, Kenyan players can go for long distance, such as 50 kilometers, without getting tired. We also want to begin practicing the same. Our players are ready. They just need to be coached in athletics.
The athletes hope one day South Sudan will be peaceful and good sports infrastructure will be constructed in the country to encourage South Sudanese to compete in international games. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
Still on sports, the NBA's Basketball Without Borders program has been scouting and training both girls and boys across the continent for 17 years. Teenage girls taking part in the program say working with women from the continent who played for NBA teams has motivated them to stay in the game. From Dakar, Isha Saraya has more.
For one intense week, 40 boys and 20 girls from 29 African countries were chosen for a highly selective program to train with current and former NBA and WNBA players. One of the participants, 16-year-old Iris from Gabon, says she has loved the experience. Iris says the experience has been enriching and has helped to renew her enthusiasm to keep going and become someone in the world of basketball. The coaches and mentors are helping these young players through drills and matches, but also serving as role models of what they can become. One such role model is Astu Ndiaye, originally from Senegal. Ndiaye played for the Detroit Shock, which won the 2003 WNBA championship.
We have walked the path that they want to walk. So just being here, being able to talk to them, answer their questions, and really give them hopefully the confidence they need to know that if we can do it, they can, because there is a path for them.
Ndiaye has been coaching young women in the Basketball Without Borders program for years, and her mentees this year, like Vanessa, say they're honored to be working with her. Vanessa, a 16-year-old player from Cameroon, says that WNBA players like Ndiaye are the reason that she has really applied herself in basketball and believes that one day she can succeed. And organizers say that promoting young female players on the continent is just as important to them as working with the boys. Amadou Galofal, NBA Africa's managing director, says he is equally focused on the program for girls and boys.
Our primary mission and goal at NBA Africa, when we launched, was to really increase participation in our sport. So you cannot do that by ignoring more than half the population. So I think over the years we've seen tremendous progress in the women's game.
Ndiaye and other female coaches say that in part due to programs like these, the future for girls in basketball across the continent is bright.
It's getting better. If we remember, we were pioneers then, and the salaries, all the benefits and advantage that the kids are getting now, unbelievable. So it can only get better.
The 20 girls chosen for this program say they are returning home not only with hope for their own futures in basketball, but to share their experiences with their communities and inspire other girls to pursue their dreams. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Dakar.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Kwanyi Kwara, Sudan Gang Pay by Acholi Traditional Group. We've been listening to Acholi Traditional Group with the song Kwanyi Kwara, Sudan Gang Pay. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tingam Tua, the Quarawa, Sudan Gambia, Bakura woman at Tingam Wa, the Quarawa, Sudan Gambia, Baruti, Jiki, Tingam Tua, the Quarawa.